Sometimes they're notorious Grinches.
I used to play Cheerios as a fun deck.
Fair magic card, doing some unfair things.
Turn four Carnage Tyrant.
Those are the things that separate the great players from the really, really good players.
Junk is the correct term.
She's hot, but a little bit crazy, and you don't really know how to put all that together.
Ooh, it's Christmas early a little bit.
It was nonsense, pure nonsense.
Oh, you brave soul, we hope you're faring as well as your turkey on the table this week. It's Thanksgiving in the States. I'm obligated as an American to make a reference. One thing we're obligated to do on this show, we're going to be talking about the magic not only we played, but that was played in the tournament scene around the world. And yes, it's raining cardboard money. Matt has our umbrella. We'll talk about that a little bit later. I'm Sean Seacrease. He's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. And together, when we all put our fists in the ring, we form the tryhards. Guys, each week we get things started with, what are you drinking? Matt, what are you drinking this week?
The girlfriend and I made an executive decision to ignore our diet for until after Thanksgiving. Because of that, I've got a nice, delicious beer. I've got a 90-minute Dogfish Head IPA, because normally I would not be able to have that.
Last week you kind of started with the shirking the diet a little bit. Is this something that's just going to carry through 2019?
We're not having a big get-together for Christmas. She's like, you best believe I'm eating some stuffing at Thanksgiving. I'm like, then what is the point of us spending a week of hell going back into ketosis when we could just do it, like, you know, this upcoming Sunday? And she's like, okay.
That didn't take too long to convince her, right?
No, it didn't. It didn't take too long to convince me. In fact, I made a I played the game of, what do I have left in the kitchen to cook for dinner tonight? The answer was pasta and hamburger. So I made a Instant Pot hamburger helper.
That's how you celebrate being out of ketosis, is Instant Pot hamburger helper. Sean, save me. Save me right now.
He just collapsed on the floor like having a seizure.
This is why I wish we had live video. I'm just shaking my head back and forth. Just awful.
Hey, it'll never get bored with me. You know that.
Matt, the problem you're going to have is that by not having had beer in so long, there's such a high alcohol percentage in that we're going to have to keep an eye out for you here toward the end of the podcast. Brian, what are you drinking tonight?
I've got something a little special in the glass tonight. It's a good thing to clean out the beer fridge every now and then, because you chance upon some special brews. 2 years ago, we made a pilgrimage, I would call it, up to New Glarus Brewing Company in Wisconsin, just on a vacay. And we got there on a weekend where they had released kind of their brewmaster's special editions. And you had to buy, kind of get a special ticket and stand in line and stuff. Well, we bought two of each of the bottles, and I thought we had gone through everything. But no, there was a bottle left. This is the New Glarus Sour Porter, of all things. Sean's probably wrinkling his nose up right now. This is why, another reason why we need video. This was brewed in February of 17, bottled in April of 2017. And it's been sitting at the bottom of my fridge for quite some time. And man, it is really good. It's like smoky. It's got that kind of meaty, dark porter to it, but it's naturally fermented. So it's a little sour, and it's really, really good. John, I even think you'd probably like this.
Like a newborn pug is what I look like when you said that. I had it all just... All the beers in the world that I love, I've just never been able to get on board with sours. We've been doing this cast long enough. I remember when you made that trip and talked about your first run of them here on Tryhards.
I'm really excited that this was there. I was kind of like, ooh, it's Christmas early a little bit this year.
Always good to have that, especially running up toward the holidays. That's what we're drinking. We hope you've got something cool in the glass this week, as we head right into Thanksgiving here in the States. And hopefully you and yours, no matter where you are, have a great get together in the upcoming weeks. Guys, what magic did you play? Matt, I'm going to have you hit lead off here. You were at a PPTQ. What did you end up going with, and how did it work out for you?
Well, I took a box of cards with me and decided to build a deck out of that.
God.
They're like, didn't you play this deck? I'm like, yeah, I've been playing it for like a month. They're like, so you don't know what cards are in? I'm like, I'm just going to change a bunch. I changed like 10 cards in it. It did not go well. After the Pro Tour, I really expected a lot of aggro. That is not what happened at all. I sent the exact stats to you guys. I think it was 10 Drake decks, 4 control decks, a single mono red, and single green black. Did not go well at all. I ended up taking dead last. This was one of those cases of I made the wrong metagame choice. Well, you know, it happens, I guess. I ended up taking the Grixis Bolas deck. I think, and Sean, you've told me this before, I think that deck is just the wrong side of the metagame right now, to put it lightly. I think it's a good deck. You can do some really powerful stuff, but I think it's just the wrong side of the metagame.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It has a lot of powerful card combinations, but they're just not lining up with the tumblers that are the current standard metagame. And so you end up on the outside of a lot of those powerful interactions. Matt, we've all been there before, but I'm a little bit relieved to say that after your success at Eternal Weekend a year ago in Pittsburgh, I started to be a little worried that you were overqualified to be on the Tryhards podcast. But
thanks, Sean.
After finishing dead last in a PPTQ, welcome back into the fold. So we're glad.
I'm back in pleasant company at this point.
Back on our level.
Oh, I resemble that remark.
Yes.
Brian, what Magic did you play?
I was going to play a little bit of Modern this weekend, but I turned around and realized that someone else has all of my Modern cards. So I wasn't going to play. Anyway, Hurley, whenever you want to ship those back to me, just
I actually have your tracking number.
Fantabulous. Fantabulous. So no, I didn't get to play anything this week.
It's nobody in the Shark Tank in Galesburg. It's one of the other tryhards who is still holding a significant portion of Brian's collection hostage right now.
Yes.
So Brian still gets a hall pass here on what Magic did he play. I got to play just a little bit on Arena today. Had some free time this afternoon before doing some stuff tonight. I had texted Matt with his cold runnings in his PPTQ that he had infected me just by texting me. Made a couple of adjustments to the Naya ramp deck, and I now have been able to run through a couple of leagues at either XO or X1, so that's been going well for me. What are those adjustments? Whatever the cleric is, it's like Remorseful Cleric, the one and a white 2/1 flyer, sacrifice it, exile target graveyard. Being able to bring those out of the sideboard and then going to a Shalai sideboard plan along with my main deck March of the Multitudes and the ramp deck has actually been really good for me. And then Death Eater and Phyrexian Scriptures has allowed me to attack the graveyard decks. And that was the weakness before. And for right now, anyway, it seems to have shored things up. So that's actually been pretty fun to play. But this is what I've actually taken away from it. And you guys both played long enough ago that you should be able to understand this simile. I'm experiencing right now that Dawn of Hope, one in a white enchantment, three in a white, make a 1/1 lifelinker. Whenever you gain life, you can pay two to draw a card. The Dawn of Hope subgame, when you have that card in play and the mana to activate it, is actually a lot like the Pack Rat subgame from the last time that we were in Ravnica.
Oh, wow. Art is so good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you had, Matt, any experience with it? You had the most visceral reaction to that. Is it something that you're familiar with? And am I too far out on a limb? Because I'm not saying it operates on the same axis, but it becomes a magic match that's about one card that's in play until it's removed. And then while your opponent expends their resources to remove that, you're just piling up resources in your hand that you then can roll out onto the battlefield, and the match seems to play very one way when you have Dawn of Hope in play.
One of the control guys at this PPTQ was playing Jeskai. He had Dawn of Hope in there. Only way I was really able to beat that card because of my Angrath. Holy cow, the Angrath was just doing some serious work. But Dawn of Hope is an amazing card and should not be underestimated. I actually debated making an Esper deck just so that I could play that was one of the main reasons, was playing Dawn of Hope.
It seems like you've got an ace in the hole with this card against so many matchups. Drawing a card, creating a one white soldier token with lifelink, that seems to be such big game against so much of what's going on in the metagame right now.
Yeah, it's been good so far, and hopefully get to explore that a little bit more. Matt and I have been talking a little bit. The other thing I'm itching to do is find the best Thief of Sanity shell. Of course, everybody's playing Shock right now, so maybe that's not a good idea, but I've wasted time on other bad ideas as well, so I'm open to this one. We'll see how that project goes forward. That's the Magic we played. We hope that you had a great time playing in what's been absolutely a fantastic standard environment. Guys, that brings us up to our announcement for next week's Patreon raffle. We now announce the prize ahead of time and give you a chance to register, Matt, on Twitter for the raffle. We have one last Tryhards emblazoned signed playmat. These are original creations. We all got together and signed a few of them. Our patrons have most of them, but we saved one back for a raffle. How do people get involved on Twitter? Our patrons are already in. You can check us out, patreon.com/tryhards. if you want to be registered for every raffle that we do without having to get with us on Twitter? What's the buzzword this week if they want to get in on the signed TryHards playmat?
It'll still be hashtag TryHards, and that's TRIHARDS. I will announce it on Twitter when this releases on Wednesday. It'll be the 21st. And reply and make a comment, and you are entered if you're not a patron already.
That brings us up to the magic that was played this week at a much higher level that we had a chance to participate in. Brian, our friends at the Leaving a Legacy podcast, Pat Uglow and Jerry Mee, hosted their second Leaving a Legacy event. And this was a lot of fun for us to watch. People who just love the format came out of the woodwork from everywhere. And I know you kept an eye on how this relatively small but beloved event actually played out.
This was a great event. I'm hoping we have some TryHards listeners who were able to play in this event. We'd love to hear if you did. 103 players showed up to Gaming Etc. in Acton, Massachusetts this past Saturday for the Leaving a Legacy 2K. It looked like a very, very diverse metagame. There was a lot of really cool plays, a lot of really cool decks in the room as well. The coverage, guys, if you caught anything on Twitch, seemed to be really, really good. Pat and Jerry just kind of have their banter down. It seemed to be really, really fun, and especially when Bryant Cook kind of scrubbed it out and joined them later in the cast. It was a really, really good time. Very, very entertaining. Our favorite format, which was Legacy. So getting to the top eight, we had a few different lists that were kind of copied exactly. In fifth place, Christopher Stitson, and in eighth place, William Godsey, both running the same list for Miracles. Sixth place, Zach Turgeon, and in third place, Tom Kessler, both running the same list for Mono Red Stompy, which are very, very popular in the Northeast. In seventh place, Owen Shoemaker with Sneak and Show. In second place, Adam Juvea with Maverick, and the deck that took it down, Ross McGee on Grixis Delver. If you know that the Leaving a Legacy award this weekend was a trophy and you get to put a card in there, the card was none other than a card from Guilds of Ravnica, gentlemen. It was Mission Briefing. Mission Briefing is the card that Ross chose to put into his little clear acrylic shell for the Leaving a Legacy tournament. So I thought that was quite fascinating and shows that Leaving a Legacy put on A, a great event, that they had a trophy for it, but B, that Legacy is alive and well and still getting those new cards into the rotation.
Yeah, it was an interesting riff on the old World Championship where you got to kind of design a one-off card and then it went into the trophy. Yeah. I love the throwback idea that Pat and Jerry came up with for that. Congratulations to them. That was a fantastic watch over the weekend and a lot of fun. Matt, you were keeping a close eye on Magic Fest Milwaukee. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm living in the future. It's still GP Milwaukee. You're going to have to play Standard as well as Modern at the SCG Invitational. In case nobody's listened to a recent podcast, Matt's qualified for the SCG Invitational. I know that you were playing in a PPTQ this weekend that was Standard. After your experience in that PPTQ, what did you take away from this Magic Fest as you kind of watched the top eight play out?
1,298 players for Standard. I think that's one of the larger Standard tournaments and GPs that they've had in recent memory. Honestly, this Standard format reminds me a lot of old school Legacy, where it's a lot of rock, paper, scissors. Adrian Sullivan, you might recognize that name, famed deck designer, famed writer, top four Pro Tour Brussels, which was Dragons of Tarkir. He won the tournament. He did some amazing plays. I got to watch the clip. If you haven't seen it, go watch the clip. Him casting Spell Swindle on a Carnage Tyrant. And you think, it doesn't counter it. But it does, in fact, give you those treasures. And then he was able to explosion for 17 to his opponent next turn for the win. What a play. So in the top eight, Adrian Sullivan played Jeskai Control. We had four Golgari Midrange, a Mono White Aggro, another Jeskai Control, and an Izzet Drakes. I played a lot of Izzet Drakes this weekend against a lot of Izzet Drakes, and I got to say, that deck is freaking powerful. There's a lot of these decks that are very powerful, but this Standard format looks just absolutely amazing. I'm really, really hoping that when the Azorius Guild comes out, they don't actually, I hate to say it, up by making Azorius too powerful, since Teferi is currently in the format. This Standard format looks amazing, and I can't wait for to see where it all goes.
Normally, when I get an experience in Legacy translated to Standard, I'm all about it. But in this case, I'm going to make an exception. In Legacy, when you make a deck choice, you have that like sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach when an opponent rolls out one strategy that you know you don't have covered. It seems like no matter what deck I select to play in Standard, Drakes always just makes me nervous. That deck is so powerful. And now people are playing it out of the Jeskai shell as well. The deck that I've been playing, really, the Naya Ramp deck. Okay, not a traditional powerhouse right now, but I'm trying to assault the metagame in a certain way to find angles. The blue-red Drake deck, I can find my way around with that deck. Now that they've gone to a Jeskai shell using the main deck Nev-Mizzet with Crackling Drake and the other Jeskai control cards, that deck is just the skeleton key that absolutely makes my deck fall apart. And the fact that in my two XO runs through leagues, I was able to split one and one, okay, X1 or whatever it was, but I was able to actually go 50% against the Jeskai version of that deck with my new build made me very, very happy. I think, Brian, that Jeskai Drake deck might actually be better the way the metagame is moving than just the straight blue-red combo Drake deck, even though they don't bring as immediate a threat to win the game on the spot in a combo fashion.
This is the one that we saw out of the GP from last week. I was looking at that saying, wow, that, there's something there. When you can pair the power of Teferi with the power of Crackling Drake and Deafening Clarion, and if you can make all those colors work with all of the other things that are going on in that deck, I feel like that's right there. Those three cards are kind of the glue that holds that together. You've got just some crazy, crazy things going on because it can play like a mid-range deck and it can also play like a control deck when it needs to. And it can do that very, very quickly just because of the different modes on Deafening Clarion and all kinds of other things. So I absolutely loved Sullivan's take on adding the treasure to that. I think that was a really, really good call to make sure you have the mana that you need going forward. That moment that Hurley already brought up, I think was just fantastic. Those are the things that separate the great players from the really, really good players. I was surprised that there were so many Jeskai Control and Golgari midrange at Milwaukee this weekend. I was expecting to see a little bit more aggro. Hurley, do you think we're moving a little bit away from aggro as most formats kind of adopt aggro moving forward? Are we kind of in its nadir and kind of the rise to the midrange and to the control decks going forward? Or do you still think it's got a powerful spot still left?
Oh, I think that aggro has a powerful spot. If you look at the top 100 decks for starting day two, there were 30 Golgari midrange, 17 Jeskai Control, 16 Drakes, 23 aggro decks after that, and then 5 Dimir Esper Controls and 3 Esper Controls. So I think that once the format adjusts to beating kind of the Jeskai Control or the Izzet Drakes in the Golgari midrange, then the aggros will pop up. And that's why I call this kind of the old legacy metagame, because I really do think that when that happens, these other decks are going to be just absolutely amazing. Like, you know, like they'll just pop up for a week. It's going to be like Dredge, you know, that ugly Dredge that just pops up randomly.
I have to say this about Adrian Sullivan over the weekend. Fantastic player, played at maybe his apex as a player, but the one card that he rode to victory drives me absolutely insane. The fact that Expansion Explosion has hybrid mana for expansion and that your opponent can just have two red up and you're like, oh, I can do this. And then you get expansioned back. It just makes me insane.
I cast a lot of Thought Erasure. Yeah, that card is awesome.
But then they tap two red to
exactly, and then they copy it and do it at instant speed. And you're just like, no.
If it was just hard Izzet colors, a blue and a red, I think it would just make me annoyed instead of making me want to just go crazy.
Shenanigans out of a red mage.
Yeah. They're always playing the Jeskai deck, but they just might not have had the blue land in play. And you're thinking, I can sneak this in now. No, you can't. No, you can't. Off. No, you can't.
maybe that the card more than Ionize. When I first called this, 4 weeks ago, I thought Ionize was going to be the card that kind of, you know, put this over the top. But man, Expansion has just shown its mettle, and I think it's going to continue to do so for the next 3-4 months.
You know, Brian, I'm with you because obviously the ceiling on Expansion Explosion is much higher, but I think what people didn't expect is the floor is probably as high as Ionize's floor is. And once you realize that, I think it becomes an easy choice. So it'll be interesting to see how decks start stretching themselves to try and adopt Expansion Explosion, if they do or if they go in other directions, and that remains the sole province of the Is It Drake deck or the Jeskai Drake control deck so far. So it should be interesting to see how that all plays out. We had one more tournament that we want to get to for just a moment. SCG Vegas was Team Trios. 191 teams turned out. Cyrus Gorman Gill, Zhang, and Thibaut defeated Lancaster, Whitehorse, and Kine in the finals, 2-0. Corbin Gill, the renowned Stormmaster. I think he's been so hot this last year. I think he's actually leg-locked Indian wrestling style with Bryant Cook for best Storm player alive at the moment. I'd watch that in a heartbeat to see which those two just play off for the title of world's best living Stormmaster. Zhang was on Dredge. Thibaut was on Boros Aggro in Standard. For the losing team, Lancaster was on Lands in Legacy. Whiteside was on Vance Spirits. No word on whether or not Matt told everybody to take Raking Canopy to take down Banned Spirits. And then Kine was on Green
Light. Don't worry, you're going to see it on camera at the Invitational.
We all hope so. Kine was on Green White Selesnya tokens in Standard. So watching this, it is, of course, so difficult to dig into those metagame numbers when you're looking at team results. There are a couple of recurring themes that I want to get your guys' opinion on. We're now seeing Arclight Phoenix in Modern. We saw Ross Merriam playing it in a Grixis shell. It also appeared in Mardu shells. Now with Faithless Looting enabling both Hollow One and Arclight Phoenix, is it time to put Faithless Looting on the list that Wizards may ban in Modern, Brian?
Faithless Looting still seems to me to be a fair Magic card doing some unfair things in certain decks. I don't think you would want to ban that card because I feel like you're taking away such an angle from so many different decks that have really appreciated using the graveyard as a resource. And there's so much graveyard hate out there that if you start banning cards like that, I feel like, you know, you're just kind of negating the purpose of balance that's already there and maybe just leading it tilt to one side. So I don't think that one is too much of a problem at this point.
If you really look at it, I guess it's close. But I got to say, I don't think that it should be on the chopping block. I mean, there's ways to beat it. Once you get to a point where it's just completely, you know, you feel neutered by the deck, like you can't interact at all. I think there's bigger targets there. The Metamorphose is probably high in the list. I mean, I think Metamorphose is just like, you're going to look back. And I mean, Jerry T said this at one point, but you're going to look back, you're going to say, why was I not playing so many Metamorphose? I think that's higher on the chopping block. I think Mox Opal is higher on the chopping block, but I think Faithless Looting's on the list, like maybe the top 10, top 5, but we have a lot more bigger threats to hammer out before that.
If you watch the coverage from Vegas, Cedric and Patrick, who are doing the work for SCG Vegas, continually referred to a renaissance that was going on in Legacy, and that's Stoneblade. There seemingly was a revival in the room. Guys, do you think this was a metagame call? Or is it the right time to get back to Stoneforge mysticking people? Brian, you've been really waffling on your Legacy deck lately, and you're somebody who has played Stoneblade a whole bunch in the past. Are you in on Stoneblade right now, no matter what shell you want to talk about? Or is it not the right time to search up your Jits and your Batterskulls?
Oh, I definitely think it's the right time to do it. It's one of those things where mid-rangey to control lists with the Stoneblade package are really, really strong right now. I feel like there's enough permission in those lists. There's enough pressure in them. Whenever Stoneforge comes down, I don't care who you are. There's not a player out there who plays Legacy who, when Stoneforge Mystic comes down and it resolves and the player gets to go search up their equipment, that somebody's just kind of not suddenly, you know, their gears aren't turning in their head going, okay, I now have to deal with something I wasn't maybe prepared for, or, you know, maybe not this soon, or whew, I'm glad I have the answer in my hand. But you have to acknowledge that. It's not the same as other things. There's just a redundancy there. The fact that you can put that equipment onto the battlefield at instant speed is a bigger deal. And so I feel like the Stoneblade decks just, you know, it rises and falls with the metagame, and this is a good time for those Stoneblade decks. The blue-white Stoneblade might be the best way to go right now, just because, A, it's easier on the mana, and B, you can pack more permission than trying to do the disruption a little bit too. And if you've got double blue, Trine Nemesis carrying any kind of equipment is just a house.
Hurley, assuming that your opponent didn't have Shadow of Doubt at the ready when you cast Stoneforge Mystic.
Oh, good Lord.
Is this a strategy you're interested in right now in Legacy? Because we've noted it on the show before. You love littering the board with just stuff.
Junk is the correct term. I do like it. And in fact, we talked about during our Tryhards outing when we were in Minneapolis where to take Stoneblade. I think you might want to pair it with green to just get a lot of good sideboard cards and to get a lot of good like green creatures and green cards and stuff like that. I'm a big fan of it. I need to put a Legacy deck together as well in case I, by some dumb luck, I happen to scrub out at, you know, Invitational weekend and I want to play a sideboard Legacy event, and it's going to have Stoneforge Mystic in it somehow.
Well, we hope that doesn't happen because we've already reserved that entire show for you to narrate your path to victory at the Invitational here.
Easy peasy.
Here on Tryhards. That was the Tournament Magic this weekend. As much fun as that was, you know what's even more fun sometimes? Adding sweet cards to your deck. And Wizards has come up with a way for us to do this. Sometimes they're notorious Grinches, but this time it seems like they're just raining sweet cardboard down around all of us with Ultimate Masters. Yes, Wizards has said this is going to be it for the Masters run for a while. They're going to put it on the shelf, and they'll get back to it later when they think it's appropriate, but boy, what a final act they seem to be leaving behind. Guys, this has been so much fun to look at. Matt has gone hyperbolic based on the value and the geometric calculations of the rising value of the dollar versus the expected value of the cardboard. Matt, I didn't even know you had that advanced of a calculator. I thought you just had an abacus. How have you been figuring this all out, and what revelations have you been dealing with almost day by day as we're now in the Ultimate Masters spoiler season?
Okay, so this set is by far best Masters set from a value perspective. I am blown away by what they're putting into the set, and I'm just hoping that it'll be a fun set to actually draft. Let's put it this way. I'm going to be spending a lot of money after Ultimate Masters drops.
Well, spending money on something is one thing. Wanting a great draft format is entirely separate. Mm-hmm. But just that I need some of these feeling. It's the FOMO, I think, that Wizards is trying to induce at this point. As I look through the art, as I look through the Ultimate Box Toppers, which, can I go on just a sidebar rant for a moment? The fact that the Ultimate Box Toppers are the same art as the other cards in the set, just without borders, feels kind of cheap to me. I mean, they look great, don't get me wrong, but the fact that the only difference is that your box topper doesn't have a border, eh. But I will say this, the art for Goryeo's Vengeance, I have for a long time been looking at Grishol brand in Modern. The way that a guy kind of looks at a girl across the room who's way out of his league and he can't handle because she's hot but a little bit crazy and you don't really know how to put all that together. That's kind of the way that I've been looking at Grishol brand for a while in Modern. But the art is so good on these, I may just take the plunge and do it. Brian, you play a ton of Modern and talk about it here on the cast. Is there anything you're being moved by now that we're seeing some of these early releases?
If you're a living, breathing Magic person, you're going to get excited about Ultimate Masters. There's just no two ways about it. You know, the one thing I think that I'm kind of excited about, and this was when I kind of had my little dalliance with Sneak and Show at Eternal Weekend in 2017 in Pittsburgh, gentlemen, which went so well, as you remember. I feel like with kind of a reprinting of Dark Depths, I feel like if there's any card that I just don't own that I could, you know, see myself playing at a Legacy event coming up, it would be Dark Depths. And that new artwork, especially the full art, I think is really, really great, because you've got, on the original artwork, you've got the guy standing on the ice and you kind of see the Merit Lage underneath the ice. And now you see it from Merit Lage's point of view and the guy standing above the ice. And I think that's really, really cool. If the price drops enough, that might be one of those things that I just kind of, you know, sell some chaff to various outlets to grab those and then maybe play some version of, you know, the Bug Depths or Golgari Depths or something. Which has seen some of the plays around at some of these Legacy tournaments. So that's what I'm pretty excited about. Obviously, there's Modern stuff that I'm excited about, especially artwork on Bitter Blossom. Sean, you mentioned that last week, mm-hmm. and a bunch of the other stuff. The Grishol brand, that's surprising. I never thought you would be going in for maybe that kind of deck, but I would love to see you pilot that and see what kind of crazy results you could do with it.
What stood out to me Ancient Tomb, now a rare. Cavern of Souls, a mythic. The art on both of those is amazing. But let's get to Matt before he absolutely explodes. Because, Matt, you have been texting Brian and I like we're your own private news subscribers when you're doing the calculations based on the expected value of a box. Should people be really expecting to get MSRP out of this box based on what we've seen spoiled so far? Because there are a legitimate raft of high-dollar cards, and some of these cards even stretch down into uncommon. Throw in the fact that every box includes a ultimate box topper, and this seems like, if you're able to peel off the Benjamins to pick one up, a no-brainer at this point.
I'm of the opposite as you right now. I think you look for specific cards in the sets, and you buy them at peak supply, which is probably going to be right around Christmas. Historically, the low for the entire Magic market, but you can get boxes all over the place for anywhere from $250 to $300 right now. In the short term, there's going to be what is viewed as a glut of supply, but in the long term, that's not going to be the case. This supply is going to dry up rather quickly. People are going to be surprised at how little there is once middle of January rolls around. So I am personally probably not going to buy a box only because I think the money is better spent. Today, Phyrexian Altar was released. That card was a $50 card, some ridiculous price like that, heavily used in EDH. It's now a rare in a really imprint set. So we're looking at, I don't know, maybe $10. I think your $10 Phyrexian Altars are going to be $25 Phyrexian Altars this time next year. So I think that's where you want to put your money at.
We'll see how this all ends up playing out in the final Masters offering for quite some time. Ultimate Masters releasing soon and hopefully coming to a draft near you. Well, there's one thing you don't have to worry about this week's In the Elevator. It's any room. Anytime you have a fire-breathing, flame-chained Minotaur Planeswalker in there with Matt, yeah, you just wait for the next elevator up. Matt, why do you keep saying no fire, no steel?
Angrath the Flame Chained right now is under $7. I know I've called him before as a pick. I think this one's a no-brainer. We've got Rakdos coming out in the next sets. I played this card this weekend. It is broken against Control. If Control's not running black to actually run your Vraska's Contempts, this card is busted in half. I'd say pick up. I've already called him. I'd say pick up your Angraths even now at under $7.
Angrath the Flame Chain, this week's In the Elevator here on Tryhards. That brings us up to 3 minutes to brew. Our brewmaster is going to present us with something we're not very good with. Apparently, we have choices tonight, Brian. You reap what you sow.
I was so inundated with the information coming out about Ultimate Masters today that, guys, I kind of have to say, well, I just punted and decided to go with what I have on deck for you. So, with the reprint of both Phyrexian Tower and Phyrexian Altar, I thought we'd make a little choice game here tonight on 3 Minutes to Brew and give you a choice of choosing one of them. And if you were going to brew with one of these cards, what would it be? Let's go over the stats, shall we? First of all, Phyrexian Tower, originally printed in Urza's Saga, Legendary Land. Add one colorless mana to your mana pool, or tap it, sacrifice a creature, add two black to your mana pool. Phyrexian Altar, originally from Invasion, this is just a 3-mana artifact. Sacrifice a creature, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So both have upside, both have a little bit of downside from where I can see. If you were going to pick one of these, Phyrexian Tower, Phyrexian Altar, which would you choose, and what would you brew with it?
My favorite to brew with Phyrexian Tower is obviously Nykvit. Sean's going to agree with me on this. That's just kind of a shoe-in. Phyrexian Altar, though, I used to play Cheerios as a fun deck in Legacy. And if you're not familiar with Cheerios, that's where you play all the 0-mana kobolds, and you either play Beastmaster Ascension to give them all +4/+4, whatever it is. You can also bring them all back with, I think it was Scapegoats. Just cast them after you cast Glimpse of Nature, just draw your entire deck. It was nonsense, pure nonsense. The only problem with that deck, I should say the only problem, the biggest problem is it just lost, it was a glass cannon, lost the Force of Will. So if you could find a way to incorporate all the zero cost stuff into a deck, sacrifice it out to create colored mana for Phyrexian Altar, I think that's where you want to be. Tried it with the Goblin Bombardment as well, and it just didn't mesh. But maybe Phyrexian Ultra is the key there, and somehow giving your guys flashback or unearth or something along those lines. So I like sacrificing stuff for Phyrexian Ultra. It's definitely an EDH card for the most part.
Sean, you going to do anything broken, like start to play Cheerios instead of Grishulbrand in Modern? What's your choice, and what are you going to brew with your choice?
I'm not going to do anything as broken as Cheerios. You do know that I've registered every possible variation of Nickfit in a DCI-covered tournament. So obviously my choice is Phyrexian Tower. Phyrexian Tower only has a downside if you're not getting anything from the creature you sacrifice. In the format of Legacy, there is such a wide and deep card pool that you have things like Veteran Explorer that are actually a boon to sacrifice. And when you can abuse those things, things like Turn 3 Thragtusk suddenly are plays that your Legacy opponent is not really prepared for. That's just a whole different axis than what they signed up to play against. Doing those kinds of things. Turn 4 Carnage Tyrant. These are winning plays in Legacy, and they're just
they're
so much
fun. They're winning plays in Legacy.
Yes. I mean, you can tell from the smile in my voice right now, they are so much fun. And then you use things like flashing back a discard spell, you know, from your hand, Cabal Therapy. There's just so many things you can do with a deck built around Phyrexian Tower. Abusing that mechanic is one of my favorite things to do. We haven't even talked about Academy Rector yet. And there's not even time for me to do it right now.
I love both of what you're doing because it brings out both your personalities so well. The fact that Hurley once ran Cheerios and probably will again one day.
Oh, it was not once.
Yeah, right. Well, a man can have his limits, but then again, it's you, so maybe not. And then Sean, you're right. The days of Nickfit, whenever Nickfit happens, I feel like, you know, the words nipples and hard just seems to happen. For my own purposes, I would love, I've been dreaming about this ever since Carnage Tyrant was spoiled, is to play a Nickfit Carnage Tyrant deck in Legacy, because something about a 7-6 hexproof trampler that can't be countered just seems really, really good in Legacy. And green is very underappreciated at some point, so I feel like Phyrexian Tower just is that degenerate card that you need. The drawback I was talking about is the fact that it is a legendary land. Does give it a little downside in a wasteland format. You can kind of lose that. And if your Phyrexian Tower has ever gotten wastelanded, you know, sad pandas all around. Phyrexian Altar, on the other hand, I feel like this is a deck that could benefit from something like, you know, Bitter Blossom tokens and other crazy things like Thopter Foundries, other crazy things like Monastery Mentor tokens that you have no way to pump with instant spells. Hey, just sacrifice them to the altar and, you know, make some more mana to do something else. There's so many other variations of that. If I had to choose one, I think the Phyrexian Tower is the one I want to go with. And I feel like just ramping up big creatures in formats that don't normally rely on big creatures, a la Modern and a la Legacy, are really what I want to do. It almost feels like you're doing something in the Vintage realm when you're doing that.
We went a little long on 3 minutes to brew tonight, but it was well worth it. Phyrexian, Tower or Altar, what's your poison? Speaking of poisons, if you would like our opinion on anything you're up to, well, why don't you email us, thetryhards3@gmail.com. Brian Sloan, fantastic patron who has been a longtime supporter of the show. We have your email. You are in the leadoff spot. We are going to do a mailbag show coming up during the slower holiday season. If you want us to answer anything, thetryhards3@gmail.com, and we will get to all those coming up very soon. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. For me, simply not playing a whole lot of Magic. Yes, I'm going to beat the dead horse at this point. I'm still watching the Chess World Championships and thinking a little bit more strategically about things. And I think that's actually helped me with some of my card choices with the Naya Ramp deck that I've been trying to exploit some of the metagame with on what to do as moves versus counter moves and just thinking a little bit differently in that vein. Brian, what have you done to get better at Magic?
Watching the Leaving a Legacy tournament this weekend was really great because what we got from this was almost a community event. And I feel like when you're watching Star City Games or you're watching a GP, what you've got is a lot of different ways of people telling you, here's the right way to build this, here's the wrong way to build this, oh, that wasn't a great play. And in fact, you just had Jerry and Pat kind of just calling things as they were, and they were trying to make some predictions of plays, sometimes horribly the wrong plays that they were trying to foretell. It just wasn't happening. But it was such a great environment and such a great kind of group of people who are playing and involved in this. I felt like it was really, that idea of community was really, really great. So I hope we see more of that stuff, and I hope the Leaving a Legacy guys, we're at an event where the tryhards and the Leaving a Legacy guys can get together and finally be in the same room and play some Magic together. I think that would be, that'd be great.
Matt, you were just at the PPTQ over the weekend. Grixis let you down. What'd you do to get better at Magic?
You know, honestly, it was kind of a crushing defeat because I was doing fairly well online, and I had a nice long talk on the way home. I wrote down with two of my good friends here locally. I had a nice long talk with them, kind of discussed everything. And, you know, frankly, I think it was good for me to just have my soul completely crushed in a tournament, because I did go on tilt a little bit. It's been a while since I felt like, I just got my butt kicked here. If I'm able to succeed at the Invitational, I need to be able to say, you know, I'm going to get some losses and I have to be careful, or how those affect me going into a long game. So I think the biggest thing was losing helped me, because I was able to say, hey, you know what? I screwed up. I lost. I made play mistakes. Let's identify them and fix them.
Oh, you brave soul. Joining us for this pre-Thanksgiving episode. We hope you enjoy the holidays. We hope to see you soon. Next week, we'll be here, won't you? Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Tryhards.